Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
If you vote for Joe Biden, you're going to vote for the scientists. And heaven forbid that we actually listen to scientists. Heaven forbid we listen to smart people. No, I want the guy who failed biology telling me how to deal with a pandemic. Just mind-blowing. But here's the weird thing. Everywhere I look, I see Trumpian victims. Every Trump supporter I talk to, it's all they're the victim. And look, I have to defend them because they've been told they're the victim for so long that they really don't have any other explanation. It's just sad. But I'm stuck on the if you vote for Joe Biden, he's gonna listen to the smart guy. Wow. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on should we listen to the smart guy? And this victimhood that I am now finding even more prevalent. I've asked our good friend Propane Jane to come share some thoughts with us. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
We're going to listen to scientists, damn it. How dare we? We don't need that.
Yeah, I mean, if they're saying something that's, you know, a contradiction of what Donald Trump has propagandized them to believe, they're not going to listen to it. They're going to tune everything out that's factual. And I think that's, again, just a way for them to, you know, boost their own ego and puff their own chest out because, again, they don't want to admit that they made a mistake and they voted for a disaster.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was watching one of the shindigs from Nevada, and it kind of, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I kind of tried to put myself in the audience, and I kind of wondered if it's like a Beatles concert, you know, back in the old days where you were in these massive stadiums and nobody heard anything but mild noise. Right. But hey, you were at the Beatles concert. Okay? Because if you listen to what Donald Trump says, how is it possible you could cheer this rambling, moronic, just word salad of nasty? I'm confused.
Well, how many of them were paid to be there? I mean, I think that's the first question you have to ask.
Point.
you know, it's different than a Beatles concert in that, you know, you're not necessarily paying for that ticket. In these instances, they're actually being paid to show up and look enthusiastic and look happy. And again, you know, it doesn't matter what he says. They're all colluding, you know, to create this illusion of, he's got this big crowd and they're so into everything he's saying that I don't think it really even matters what he's saying. It hasn't mattered to them for years
right.
now what he says this whole entire time. It's just that it's a cult. And the cult wants to feel popular. The cult wants to feel like a lot of people agree with them. And as far as they're concerned, you know, within their social network and the people that they interact with on a regular basis and their family, their friends, They are, you know, it's like confirmation bias. They're around people who are saying the things that they're saying and believing the things they believe. And then they turn on the TV and you got Fox News right there, right, affirming most, if not all, of their delusions. So it's a closed circuit. And I think as long as they're having a good time, they don't really care what the outside world thinks about them. Or how much of a minority they actually are in the court of public opinion.
Now, as they're having their super spreader events.
Right.
Which, if you've seen some of the pictures, you do realize we're in the midst of a global pandemic. And I know that the Messiah up on the stage claims that, you know, somehow he got it, you know, sent down from the mount, or he got it on purpose because he's, I don't know, so his blood can cure it, or whatever the hell nonsense was coming out of his mouth. But the reality is you're packed in like sardines.
Yeah. And I mean, now we're starting to see, you know, I asked this a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about the rallies. Just this rally that he just had in Minnesota, they've already traced at least 20 cases to that rally, and I think two of those people were actually hospitalized with very severe COVID. So that's the part that we're not hearing, right? I mean, he blows into town, and they have this big rally, but we're not necessarily hearing the stories about the contact tracing that happens afterwards. And what really was the impact of that rally on the COVID rate in that local area? And again, you know, I do think that they want to believe that, oh, you know, no big deal. If I get it, I'm going to survive it regardless. And as we were discussing about Chris Christie, you know, they're tuning out these voices like Chris Christie, who's actually saying, hey, guys, I actually was in the ICU. I actually spent, you know, 7 days in the hospital and almost died. But nobody's going to listen to that, right? Because, you know, they've already made this big brouhaha about it's okay to get it. Nothing bad's going to happen to you because Trump looks fine.
And the other message that would have gone with that is, well, Chris Christie's weak because he's, you know, a fat guy.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been the message. And again, you know, he actually explicitly said, you know, I should have worn a mask during the debate prep. I didn't. I should have worn a mask at all these other, you know, events that I was at with Trump and people who have tested positive since. And that was dumb. Don't do what I did.
Yeah. But what is it about people? I mean, maybe you're the psychiatrist. What is it about some of us that just do the dumbest things? And I point to this church in Virginia, where evidently a bunch of the parishioners had their big event, and like 20 or 30 of them got sick with it. There was a whole bunch of stuff that came out of this. And, you know, even the people who got it were like, oh, it was the best revival ever. You know, you almost died, but it was still worth it. And I guess I'm struggling with that mindset.
Yeah, I mean, they don't believe fat meat is greasy, as we say down here, right? I mean, it does not become real until it affects them personally. And as long as they're not affected personally and they don't end up in the most dire, extreme situation and worst-case scenario, then they're going to turn that into a victory and evidence of their prowess and, you know, how great they are. It's a lack of empathy, you know, first and foremost, where they're not able to just care about the death toll. They're not able to just look and go, wow, over 200,000 people have died from this. This is something that I should take very seriously. As long as they didn't die and no one in their family, you know, that they really genuinely care about died, then they don't care. They're just going to keep plugging away.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, even apart from actually getting sick, I think so many of them, you know, to your point about the victimhood, so many of them are unable to look at the broad range of impacts of the pandemic. Okay, maybe you didn't get sick, but how has your life changed? Are your kids in school? Do you have a job? Are you able to go out and do the things that you used to be able to do? And I think for most people, you know, the case is that no, they're not able to do things as they were doing them. But again, with these anti-maskers, for them, they're just still, I mean, think about it. We're 7 months into this, you know, more than that at this point, probably somewhere between 7 to 9. But in terms of the actual lockdown, so many of these people haven't abided by any of that.
Right.
They haven't worn masks. They're living in a completely different reality.
And, you know, the reality is that's what Trump's spiel was about when he said that, you know, Biden's going to listen to scientists is, you know, we're tired of the masks. We're tired of social distancing. We're tired of all this, and we're going to plow right through it.
Yeah.
As I predicted he would do back, you know, in February and March, that was ultimately going to be what we were going to have to do because we're really just a screwed up society.
Yeah, we're blowing this, I mean, atrociously. And you look at New Zealand, you look at around the world at these places that have gotten it under control, and it's so clear that it's the lack of leadership that's really setting us back. The CDC, which, you know, is world-renowned, is basically in the dumps right now. I mean, nobody can trust what they're saying because of the leadership. Everyone knows that leadership across the board is failing in America, and that's why this has been our abysmal response to the pandemic.
Right.
But again, you know, that tuning it out, that tuning out science, tuning out facts, that's all information that basically proves the lie that, you know, Trump actually is a complete disaster. He's not a successful business person. He is, if he's running America the way he ran his businesses, right, that he, you know, went bankrupt 6 times, then this was the predictable outcome. America is going to fail, you know, just as much as Trump has failed at anything else in his life before he became, you know, the fake president of the United States.
Clearly. I mean, we got a $3.1 trillion budget deficit. Now, a good bit of that is the pandemic, obviously, but still it was going to be well over $1 trillion without the pandemic.
Right.
As it was $1 trillion the year before and the year before. And this was the guy who told us he was going to solve our budget deficits. He was going to pay off our debt. Everything was going to be great. We were going to give these tax cuts to rich people. And you got a couple pennies, too. And it was going to all pay for itself. And it was going to do all of this stuff. And it did none of that. It just increased our debt.
Exactly. And, you know, I don't know if you saw this tweet from Kirstie Alley saying that, you know, she's voting for Trump because he's going to fix the economy and he's going to fix all these things. And it's like, wait a minute, lady, do you realize that he's the one that caused all of this?
Yeah, so you lost me at Kirstie Alley. You know, the second you said her name, I'm going, what kind of craziness is coming next? And I'm not even going to justify it with a comment. I'm going to put that into the same world as Hunter Biden left his laptop at some roadside computer shop to have some guy clone his hard drive and ship it over to Rudy Giuliani. I put each of them in the same category.
I do, too. But the thing that's so bizarre about it is, you know, when you see these matchups in terms of, you know, who do voters trust on this X, Y, and Z thing, voters, you know, are trusting Joe Biden on everything. And then they're giving points to Trump and saying, he actually is the one, they're giving him points for the economy. That's the one area where people are, you know, thinking he would do a better job than Joe Biden, right? And it's insane. I mean, just to even think about it in those terms when we know the economic situation we're in right now and how we got to this point. But I think time and time again, we see that the Republicans, you know, they inherit this reputation that they're so much better on the budget and the deficit, despite the facts showing that that's not the case, that every time they get into office, they plunge us into a recession, depression.
Yep.
You know? And then it's Democrats that have to come back in and clean it up. But I think that, you know, in this moment, there's still that tendency for whatever reason to ascribe some positive qualities to Trump and for it to be the economy. And I think the media has done a very piss-poor job in just laying what the facts actually are. How many people have slipped into poverty? 8 million people are now in poverty. 8 million more people are now in poverty than were, you know, before this pandemic started.
Yeah, but sadly, we don't care as long as it's not us.
Exactly. But again, I think that goes back to your point about the victimhood, in the sense that a lot of these Republican voters, particularly in these rural areas, and also, you know, across the Rust Belt, are actually suffering socioeconomically. They don't have good health care. They don't have good, stable jobs. They're not being paid. Even if they do have a stable job, they're not necessarily being paid a living wage that's keeping up with inflation and the cost of living now. And so in many ways, they do feel victimized. But, again, they are not ascribing the blame to the people who are actually putting them in that position. Rather than going, hey, you know, I keep voting Republican, I keep putting Mitch McConnell, you know, into this position, and this is what happens to me. The people in Kentucky aren't voting that way, right? I mean, they're not thinking about, hey, we expanded Medicaid, and now we don't have that anymore, and look at who we've sent. They're not making that connection because, you know, again, the LBJ quote, right? They are feeling better than, you know, black people, brown people, immigrants, women, LGBTQ. They're feeling superior in terms of their white privilege, their skin privilege, even though they may be dirt poor. But they are at least feeling superior because they know they have a white supremacist in the White House. And so they don't necessarily feel victimized by the economic policy. They feel victimized by the change in culture, the demographic change, people who they feel like shouldn't have rights suddenly now having more rights in our society. That's what they feel victimized by. They may not say it, they may not articulate it to you, because I think a lot of them are aware that that makes them sound like a bigot. So, again, it has to be this very nebulous, just, you know, the country's going in the wrong direction and, you know, this isn't how things are supposed to be. But ultimately, I think that's what's at the root of it. And they're going to continue to feel victimized because they're emptying out their pockets.
Yeah, but, you know, and I look at over the weekend, there was a federal judge who blocked the administration from ending the food stamp program that benefited, you know, like I think it was like 700,000 people.
Yeah.
And it didn't get a lot of coverage, didn't get a lot of story.
Right.
Because, well, they're just poor people. And,
right.
you know, those are the people who vote for McConnell, oddly enough.
Right. Exactly. I mean, in all of these red states, in all of these rural areas, you know, I mean, so much of what, you know, has become apparent to me as a psychiatrist, particularly working with underserved populations and people who live in poverty, is how many of those patients are white, particularly in the state of Texas, right? I mean, I'm in Houston. Certainly I see people from all walks of life. But the amount of white people that are in poverty across this nation, we don't talk about that. We don't talk about, you know, when people, I think most people, and not even just white people, I think black people think of it this way too, because it's in our collective, you know, history about ourselves that we've been taught, that people imagine when you talk about food stamps, when you talk about welfare, when you talk about people being, you know, on government assistance, the brain imagines a black person or a Hispanic person. It doesn't imagine the white person, that the white people that make up the majority of people on the rolls receiving government assistance.
Yeah. No, I mean, when I think of it, I think about how humiliated I was as a kid to have to use the clown money at the local store when that evil woman who, if someone would tell me where they buried her, I'll dig her up so I can kill her again. you know, but, you know, I still remember it. I was 8 years old, walked in with one of the cartoon money bills, and this woman just made the biggest scene in the world, and it was the most humiliating thing that I want nobody to have to go through, just so that we could have food on the table, because, you know, the 1970s was not a good time for a single mother in the workforce. And look, the jobs aren't there now. We've done nothing since that era to help people get the child care that they need, and now during the pandemic, it's even worse.
Yeah.
You know, we've done nothing to make, we hear a lot of people who are pro-birth, man. I'm hearing ads all the time about how the Democrats want to kill babies as soon as they're hatched. But I don't hear anybody going, hey, well, how do we make sure we feed everybody and get the education they need and the health care they need and so on.
Yeah.
I never hear that. I hear the pro-birth people want to make sure they're hatched. But when once they are, you're on your own.
Yeah. I mean, again, you know, I think the shame that is attached to needing a handout, you know, is how they call it. Needing a handout, needing that assistance, I think that, you know, it goes along with those epithets like white trash, and words that people don't, you know, want to assign to their own selves. And I think that in this society, even the people who actually rely on these benefits will actually vote against them because in many ways they're ashamed to actually need them. They want to be this rich millionaire billionaire. They vote for what they imagine and desire to be. They don't necessarily vote for where they actually are in life at this particular point.
Yeah. I said this about, you know, during the Romney presidential run, when he said, you know, 47% of people don't pay federal taxes.
Right.
I go, that means there are 47% of people who would love to pay federal taxes. I would love to pay the top marginal tax rate. Even during the Eisenhower years, I would have loved to have paid the top marginal tax rate, because that would have meant I'm rich as can. I'm making $1.6 million a year in today's dollars to pay that 92% on that next dollar. That means I've got a boatload of cash.
Yeah, exactly. But again, I think that, you know, people are thinking in that mindset of, I have all this money, I want to keep it to myself, I don't want to share it with other people, especially not people that I don't like and I don't have anything in common with. And so they're identifying with that scarcity, and it becomes a hunger game where it's everything for me and screw whoever, you know, gets left behind. And again, I think that residue of the Southern strategy of welfare queen and using words like that, takers, I mean, every single Republican that's been at the top of the ticket has used that type of language and that imagery because it works like Pavlov's dogs on the GOP base.
Yeah.
They know it works, and they know that those voters are going to vote against themselves, and that they're not going to blame the Republican Party for what happened. You know, I also think, you know, in terms of the Hunter Biden story, I've been thinking about this a lot, too. You know, not so much about the emails and the, I mean, because certainly, you know, it's more of what they did in 2016, and certainly that's the biggest piece of the story. But I think the aspects where, you know, they are castigating him and judging him and shaming him, Hunter Biden, for his substance abuse, for his right. addiction, you know, again, it's so hypocritical to me because, again, as what we've seen from the opioid epidemic that we've had over raging over the last decade is that this is an epidemic that is disproportionately affecting white people in rural areas, in the suburbs.
You know, Rush Limbaugh.
Exactly, Rush Limbaugh. I mean, these patients that I have coming in, their families are you know, these families that are going out and voting against themselves. You know, they're wondering why they don't have the necessary treatment for their family member, why they can't keep them in rehab for 30 days and 60 days and 90 days, you know, per the standard of care. Well, it's because you keep voting against that. And this I think in terms of the religiosity and the fundamentalism where they think about addiction as a moral failing, again, it goes very, you know, starkly in contradiction to what is actually happening on the real, you know, on the ground.
No, I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, I've been hearing a lot of that, because I spend a lot of time talking to voters and doing some, you know, some get out the vote efforts. And it's amazing to me that the recurring messages that I keep hearing from the people who are clearly Trump supporters,
yeah.
One of them being the, Hunter Biden was a drug addict. And I'm going, have you looked at Eric Jr.? Have you looked at Eric and Jr.? And not that I'm shaming anybody, but, you know, as my mother always said, you don't point your finger at somebody because you got three pointing back at you.
Exactly.
Also, you know, the other frame that keeps popping up, and this seems to be, you know, her emails was 2016. Everyone's now a pedophile. Today,
right.
Everyone's a pedophile. And while there are some, and I say we call them out and we do what needs to be done with them, preferably
right.
in public square with a stick, but, you know, now everybody's a pedophile. The number of times I've heard someone call Joe Biden a pedophile, I could pay that 92% tax, making $1.6 million a year, because it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's projection. I mean, you know, everything they are accusing Biden of is something that Trump has actually, in many ways, credibly been accused of. The corruption, I mean, this man is an impeached man. He was impeached for corruption. He was impeached for colluding with, you know, foreign actors to interfere in our election. These are real things that happen. His family, I mean, you know, Ivanka Trump, the Trump Organization, I mean, the levels of corruption that are there within the nepotism go so deep that as long as they are pointing a finger at Joe Biden and his family, you're not talking about the Trump crime family. You know, as long as he's calling Biden's family a crime family, it's not in the news that his family is indeed a crime family. The same thing with the pedophilia. I mean, he's been credibly accused of sexual assault by over, I think it's somewhere up to 18 women, 13 to 18 women, depending on, you know, whether they're giving the allegations any validity. We know that he had to pay out to Stormy Daniels. We know that the links between him and Jeffrey Epstein, right? There's all of this pedophilia that's swirling around even the Trump orbit.
Yep. Well, no, I mean, there's the tapes of him talking to Howard Stern about when he ran Miss Teen USA and he was in there checking out the talent as they were changing.
Exactly. And so I think these are things that the Trump campaign knows are weaknesses for him. And certainly his voters know that these are weaknesses for him. So they're just going to accuse the other guy of doing the same thing and doing it worse. It's always protection with
yeah.
them.
Which I found interesting, you know, the story that came out today, that the Department of Justice is, they're evidently arguing that Trump can't be or shouldn't be personally sued for denying the rape accusation by this writer, E. Jean Carroll, because evidently he denied it in official capacity as president, which I just don't at all get.
It's a steaming pile of crap. That's why.
That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah. And it's insulting. I mean, again, this is another episode of him using the office, abusing the power that he has been given to evade the law and to evade consequences. He's going to continue to do that until we vote him out.
Yeah, and hopefully that comes on November 3rd. Last question I've got for you, because, you know, we're in this moment of, I mean, we're, I've had instances where people want to fight. I had an instance where someone called the police on me because they claimed I threatened them. You know, there's just been all of this tension where we're really polarized.
Yeah.
Is there any way back from that? I mean, because, you know, I'm looking at, you know, these are some of these guys are my union brothers and sisters who we're really ripped apart.
Yeah.
Is there hope in the new world for on the other side if Joe Biden's elected? Because I don't know. I see Trump starting Trump TV and Bannon, you know, doing his shtick, and there being constant chaos and tension and, you know, white supremacist rallies all the time. I see this getting progressively worse. Give me some hope.
Well, you're talking to a Southerner, so I don't know how much hope I can give you. I can give you the historical context that after the Civil War, I mean, things were still polarized. Things have continued to be polarized for 150 years since then. I think we've certainly, you know, pushed it to the edges, right? And it's not necessarily just blaring at us in our faces every day. But I think that America has been a divided nation for over a century now. And I think the way that you move past it is you vote, you get people into office that are going to uphold, you know, our democracy, and you do what's right. You abide by the Constitution. You hold people accountable, and you don't just let them have their guns, have their, you know, corruption, have whatever's left, have this corrupt media that's lying all the time. I mean, we have to actually get to the source of the problem. If you have an infection, you have to get down to the infection and root it out. Or your body's not going to heal from it. And I think that, you know, this hopefully will be a turning point. It is probably going to get uglier before it gets better, sadly. But I think for those of us who do care and do want America to be better than it's ever been, we have to kind of, you know, hunker down and realize that the fight is really only beginning. And we have to stay engaged, because it's when we get disengaged and apathetic that it turns into a disaster. We have to constantly be working for our democracy. We have to constantly be fighting to, you know, expand rights in this country. And as Barack Obama always said, to make it a more perfect union. It's not perfect. And our job, each generation, is to continue to build on it and make it more perfect over time.
There you go. Good stuff. As always, Jane, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. Have a good week and be safe.
You as well, our good friend Propane Jane. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.